Yeah, the word that was used this morning during the prayer meeting, Selah, it's a term that David used. I didn't go do a, someone might have a more scientific explanation of this, but essentially it was David's musical way of saying, pause and reflect. Wait a minute and think about it. And even as we have just finished a few weeks of speaking about abide, belonging, and contributing, I had such a sense. I mean, both Dan and I covered the fact that we're coming with an assumption. And the assumption is that we are finding ourselves at the feet of the Lord. Because we shouldn't even start thinking about any of the other things if our central focus is not God Himself. Otherwise, as Pierre shared with me this morning, if our foundation is not abiding, if it's just attending, when we start adding the belonging and the contributing, that foundation will crack. If the foundation is not the abiding in the Lord, it's not going to hold long. It's going to be like a house in sand. And so, for those who don't know what abiding means, I wouldn't. I've only heard it in the Bible, not in any other modern context, but it means to just be and remain, to remain. And so, so I wanted to go back to that this morning because I don't actually want to assume that we all have good quality times with the Lord. I felt encouraged to spur us on to a place of desperation for Jesus in our own time. And so I just wanted to share a quick experience that Alicia and I recently had. A while ago, we find ourselves in a place where, I don't know, English doesn't have a nice way of saying this. It probably does, but I like the Afrikaans. We were hacking a little bit every now and again. Dan? Biting heads. Not literally. And I couldn't place what was going on. It was difficult because it's not like we were having fights or anything. It's just like there's a sink issue. And this is like recent weeks. And we sat down one day and we talked about it. I said, what's going on here? I can't place it. And we landed on the very obvious answer, which is we've got a newborn in the house. We're not sleeping very well. We're in business mode. We're doing things, but we've actually lost connection. We're so busy doing things that we haven't just taken a time of preventative care, just finding one another again. Quite a few weeks ago, I shared about the fire breaks. We have gotten into firefighting mode. And we haven't been cutting the fire breaks well. And what those times of intimacy and connection does, when you're just sitting and finding each other's hearts, is it creates a buffer, a bumper. So when the difficulties come, you've got something to fall back onto, which is love and grace and patience and kindness. And so when we noticed it, we were super intentional and said, let's just find each other a little bit again. And so we were intentional. We had conversations. We reminisced on when we met and how stupid and stupid we were, especially me, and the silly things, how God shaped us over times, and our first impressions of each other back in that time, and all these sorts of like reminiscing and looking back at our first love. And all of a sudden, lo and behold, there's a change in the atmosphere. All of a sudden, there's connection again. It's like a sense of our first love has been restored, and now we can face the difficulties again. And I wonder in the same way if we sometimes put our head down and get bogged down with the business of the day, even in the kingdom. And we forget that if we're not doing it out of faith, we're actually sinning. We can't afford not to be getting it from the source. We're saying about the water and the blood. If we're not found at that well that is living water, we have. What can we give? What do we have? And so I want to propose to you this morning, and this is what I want you to ponder on, is that if we are not connected to the source, we have nothing to offer one another. If we are not connected to the source, we have nothing to offer one another. Let's quickly read from Matthew 4, verses 4, 1 to 4. Then Jesus, led up by the Spirit into the wilderness, to be tempted by the devil. And after fasting 40 days and 40 nights, he was hungry. And the tempter came and said to him, if you are the Son of God, command these stones to become loaves of bread. But he answered, it is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. And that, for those who don't know, Jesus was quoting Deuteronomy when God spoke to the people of Israel and said, this is as they finished their wilderness journey and they were about to enter the promised land. God started explaining why did this happen? Why the 40 years in the wilderness? And God essentially sums it all up in saying this, I've taught my people that I am the bread. I am the bread. They can't bargain on food, on other food. And manna was actually a precursor, a prophetic show of what God was doing with them in the wilderness, that you need the bread of life. And so that's the title of my message, the bread of life. So I want to just show you this morning why your personal and permanent connection to God is a prerequisite to your everyday walk and this thing we have right here. Someone said it earlier. No one said it. We were singing about the attributes of God. And as we were singing about the attributes of God, I was taken back to the creation scene and I was seeing it in front of me. God was not these things only when we saw him for the first time. He was those things all along. We just saw it and we stumbled upon this incredible God. He was those things, even in himself. Did you know that? God didn't need mankind to be omnipotent, to be omnipresent, to be all those things. He was those things in himself. And so I wonder sometimes, why did God mess up creation with us? Why did God create human beings? I've wondered this many times. In Genesis 12, it talks about God creating everything, and he says God saw it was good, and God saw that was good, and God saw that was good. And at the end of it all, he creates humans, and he said, that's very good. What was so good about us? What was so great about us? Was there anything good about us? And Chad was talking about the area we live in. Sometimes being in the mountain and you see a little, and I don't know what we have, dacres or whatever the small ones are that we get in George. I've actually seen quite a few bigger ones as well. Bushbuck we have. So looking at the animals and stuff, you're like, yes, man, wouldn't this have just been pretty if human hands didn't get involved? Like we kind of mess things up a little bit. And so I wonder, why did God create us then? So in Colossians 1:16, it says this, for by him all things were created in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things created through him and for him. So that explicitly says that everything was created for his pleasure, for him, for his benefit. That means we were created for his benefit. So why did he create us in addition? Because we were the only ones created in his likeness. And what do we do when we are like someone? Any guesses? We can relate to them. We can start building friendship and relationship. And so when something or someone is like us, we can start building a bridge. And God created us for relationship. God was the creator of the rest of creation, but he didn't have relationship with it. He wanted us for relationship. Sometimes I wonder if people imagine the simulation and God playing with us for his own amusement like that. And it's not like that. Even as he sent Jesus, he made himself human so that he could relate to us in a personal level. And I wanted to look at this concept of relationship for a moment, just as a background. I'm going to skip through some of my notes just to keep it relevant to what the Lord's doing today specifically. But I think this is so key to understand. The word relationship stems from to relate. I relate to you, you relate to me. And I went to see the origin of this word. And this is not in a biblical sense. This is just where does the word relate come from? And the word relate comes from a Latin word, relatus, with a U, relatus. And it literally means this. The word means to continue going back or to keep returning. So there is no relationship if we are not continuously going back to the Lord. Even you and your wife. It would be awkward if you were married on paper but you never saw each other. Or your boss. It's an employment relationship, but you kind of have to rock up for work. Otherwise, there's no relationship. And in the same way, we can't claim to have relationship with God if we are not always returning back to him, returning back to the source. It's a repetitive thing that he's always asking us to do. So relationship means that, to keep returning to the Lord daily. And so we know this already, but Adam and Eve just went for it. They did the wrong thing. We know the gospel story that started in Genesis, so I'm not going to go in details. But the reality was this. There was some crazy pain inflicted on them as a result of the fall. but arguably the most crazy and consequential part of the fall was that they no longer had free access to God like they used to have. All of a sudden, there was shame, guilt, and separation. And even the guilt and the shame is what caused that separation between them and the Lord. And so, yes, a man will sweat to earn his wage, and ladies will go through painful labor, and thistles and thorns and snakes, and those were all part of the fall. But in reality, it was separation from the free access of to God that was the main consequence of the fall. And so, I mean, sometimes I've wondered, was God, now I've wondered, I've heard people wondering about this, and I've researched it for myself. Was Jesus the plan B? Was this God's failed plan? Did he really have faith in human beings that they would be able to do this thing well as per his design? And when it all didn't work out, he sent Jesus. Does anyone believe that? I think it's a bit like we just said about the Israelites. He was making a point. The whole of the thousands of years behind, 6,000 whatever years since the account in Genesis began, I feel like it was a story that God wrote to prepare us for this, what we're walking in right now. The gospel doesn't even mean anything without all those Old Testament trials. You look at the Israelites in the wilderness, and that's us every day, running back to sin, running back to our slave masters. And so that was no accident, but God saw throughout the ages, people keep going away from him, they keep going back to him, and they're reconciled. And they run away, and they repent, and they're reconciled. And eventually he says, there's only one way that we can solve this, and that's through Jesus. So I want to read in 2 Corinthians 5, verses 18 and 19. All this is from God, who through Jesus reconciled us to himself and gave us the ministry of reconciliation. That is, in Christ, God was reconciling the world to himself, not counting their trespasses against them, and entrusting to us the message of reconciliation. So why this constant need to be reconciled to God? Who's in finances? Anyone? Like accountants and people? There's a word they use, a recon. You do a recon. You bring things together. I can explain you in quite... No, I can't tell you what it is. But it means this. They have to speak to each other. This thing has to speak to that thing. Take this bank statement and take this invoices, and they have to speak to each other. And so we were talking different languages to God. Before Jesus came, we were trying to do the ABC, and God was saying, I'm busy with 1, 2, 3. What are you doing? And all of a sudden he says, I want to reconcile. I want to be with you again. But here's the mystery. He didn't force it on us. He asked us to believe that that is what Jesus came for, and he wants us to push into it. It's not an automatic thing. We got a car that's automatic in January, and I've driven once before, but I've never had one permanently. And I'll tell you, shifting between the two cars the whole time, it keeps getting me confused. The amount of times I've dropped a clutch, I need to remind myself. But anyway, so that thing of running forward when you leave the brake and you're in first, it's not like that in the kingdom. You're running in all the wrong directions when you're taking your foot off the gas. We need to continue pushing back into the Lord. So Jesus did a great job of building relationship with people when he was on earth, the ultimate sacrifice. He was walking with them. I mean, even that is illustration about, guys, how did this church start? It's people who met in a room, and they started finding the Lord together, and the church starts. But Jesus says all of a sudden, it's as if they didn't expect it. I mean, he warned them many times. He said, guys, this thing that we have right now, it's going to end. I'm going to heaven. And then what they were mourning in that moment and questioning and asking God, what is happening? He's probably thinking in his mind. In fact, he says it. He says, don't worry. What's coming is way better. Because you'll be able to walk to the market and to your house, and you'll walk anywhere, and you've got access to me right there. And I'll be with you until the end of the age. But don't do anything until you've got my spirit. And so God could not have made it easier for us to relate to him. When his physical person was here and he did everything he had to do, he said, now I will give each one of you access to walk with me daily. So do we have an excuse to not find Jesus daily? Jesus said this to the disciples in John 14, verse 16. And I will ask the Father, and he will give you another helper to be with you forever, even the Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive because it neither sees him nor knows him. You know him, for he dwells with you, and he will be in you. So what is the source where we start before we contribute, before we belong? And I even want to take this moment again, yet another Salah moment. And let's hear the Lord for a moment together and ask him whether he is the source of life. From which well are we drawing? Are we like that Samaritan woman? Or are we finding his water? Let's ask the Lord to speak to us for a moment. Yeah, this morning I was so aware as we were praising the Lord extravagantly that he's called us to great things. He says to the disciples that you will do things even greater than what I did. I'm going to use you to drive out demons. I'm going to use you to heal the sick. I'm going to use you to spread my gospel. But is it enough that you walked with me for these three and a half years? And he says this to them. He ordered them, it says in Acts 1, verses 3 to 5, while staying with them, he ordered them not to depart from Jerusalem, but to wait for the promise of the Father. He said to them, you cannot do the things I'm asking you to do if you're not filled with the Spirit. David says in Psalm 42, verse 1, as the deer pants for flowing streams, so pants my soul for you, O God. My soul thirsts for you, for the living God. When shall I come and appear before you? I want to ask you to be vulnerable for a moment. Is there anyone that's finding themselves in a place of experiencing a bit of a drought? I know our area is experiencing a bit of a drought at the moment. Is there anyone that feels like they could do with a bit of extra rain, a bit of extra water? Can I ask you to be brave? Put up your hand. Good, good, good. I'm thirsty. I'm very thirsty. So what do we do in times of drought? It's so incredible. Who knew that Moses had a stutter? Moses, well, we assume it's a stutter. I'm not sure we know that for a fact. Dan, you would know better than I do. We think Moses had a stutter. He definitely had a speech impediment. Yeah. But even that wasn't his biggest problem. He felt so ill-equipped. He felt so inadequate. And God gives him this incredible mission. He says, you need to go to Egypt. And it's no big deal, but I need you to challenge the king who's oppressing your people. We read it like a beautiful fable in the Bible. The fact that he wasn't killed upon the first meeting with the king is a miracle in itself. I mean, these people weren't diplomatic. It was the oldest civilization in history, the most powerful in the world at the time, the Egyptians. The Pharaoh didn't have time for anyone. Luckily, through a few marriages, Moses had an in the family. But Moses' biggest issue wasn't his stutter. It was the fact that he knew that he wasn't adequate in doing this. And I didn't ask Celine to put this up, but I'm going to read to you in Exodus 33, verses 14 to 16. Moses asked the Lord, who are you going to send with me? Who's coming with me? And we know he didn't end up going on his own. He got a buddy with him. But more than that, the Lord says to him this, my presence will go with you, and I will give you rest. And Moses said to the Lord, if your presence will not go with me, don't bring me up from this place. For how shall it be known? And listen to this. I've never read this. I don't know how. Maybe I have. But listen to this as you reflect on your witness to one another and to the world out there. Moses says, "For how shall it be known that I have found favor in your sight, I and your people? Is it not in your going with us, so that we are distinct, I and your people, from every other people on the face of the earth?" That's what he says. What makes me different? What will set me apart from everyone else? What will set me apart from Egypt and all their gods? Is it not in you going with me? And is that our heart's cry every morning? God, if you're not going to be with me today, I cannot afford to do this on my own. And I think our biggest challenge is that we are stubborn and impatient. We don't want to wait. We're impatient. We're consumers. We're used to things that break. In one or 2 weeks, I've had three different things that just broke. You just put a charger in them and they're just not charging anymore. They just died. And they're like a year old. This is what our society is. We just want to consume. And we think that our timing's better than God's. And I so know that God is saying this morning, you cannot afford to run ahead. You cannot afford to run ahead. So what do you do when God is quiet? What do you do if you're earnestly trying to find the face of God and say, Lord, what do I do next? Where do I go from this place? What do you do if God's not speaking? Do you give him a countdown? God, if you don't speak in 5 minutes, you know I'm going to have to do this on my own. I think we do that. So as I was preparing for this, I got this crazy illustration in my mind. So I want you to picture it with me. You're driving on this N2 highway late at night. You're doing 120 on the highway. It's pitch black. You know there's no street lamps on the highway, right? And your headlights just die. No warning. They're just dead. And it's black. There's nothing. What do you do in that moment? Play it out in your mind. You're behind the wheel. What do you do? Are you sure? Aren't you just going to gun ahead and faith it and say, surely God will bless my plans? Honestly, sorry, I'm not trying to be too serious, but what a catastrophic end that will have. And yet that's what we do. We make God fit into our box, our schedule, our timing. We need to become like Moses, who says, God, I will be obedient, but I won't do it without you. I will go, but I know that I need you. And since God already promised that he will be with us always, it's not like we're being demanding. We're just taking him up on his promise. So if God is hiding himself from you, do you think it's by accident? There's someone in the worship team that came to me a while ago and said, they just really desire to find the Lord a bit. That's all they want to do. They just want to find the Lord a bit. It's not for this or that reason. They just want to recalibrate and find the Lord. Can they have a few weeks off? And I was like, yes, can we all take a few weeks off to find the Lord? Maybe have no worship for 3 months. We need to be finding the Lord. And that's maturity, saying, I want to contribute, but I'm not abiding very well right now. Can I just recuperate and recalibrate? And I will say this, I'm a big preacher of the gospel of pray while you go. Don't wait. Because it's also, there's a flip side where we say, where I've said to people, you can't afford to say, I'll pray about it first, but then that's literally the permanent state that you're in, and you're never doing anything. That's also a problem. But I feel like there's balances, and I feel like the Lord's trying to push us towards a place where we're okay to wait for him. And so, I'll tell you what I would do. I would break slowly. I would remember the curvature of the road, because hopefully I've been looking at the road. And I'll slow down and I'll put on my hazards. Now, I'm sure many of the technical guys and Mythbuster enthusiasts are saying, but what if you don't have hazards? I don't know. I didn't go that far. But what I can tell you is I'm not gunning ahead. Because much like the light, it's our vision. What is our vision? If you're doing that and you're saying, the Lord has spoken to me, we're like the Egyptians. The Israelites. And we're eating sour manna. from yesterday. And he's actually saying, if you could just wait until daybreak, you would eat fresh, warm, soft, fluffy manna from heaven. So Jesus says this in John 15:4, abide in me and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine and you are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. Apart from me, you can do nothing. I actually want to add a little caveat to that. Apart from me, you can do all sorts of things, but you can't do anything fruitful. We have the pleasure of having a protea tree in our garden, which is awesome. It's a shy one. I don't know if I'm working it well enough. We don't get a lot of proteas out of it, but the issue is that thing is in the back of the garden. We can't really appreciate it all that much. So sometimes I look like a depressed puppy and I stand at the by the window and just look at it through the window and appreciate it like that until we've got two or three good ones, and then I would clip them off and we put them in a vase on the dining room table or the kitchen table. And they're beautiful for the first minute. Technically longer than that. But the reality is the moment those shears took them off, they started dying. No matter how beautiful and pretty and pink they look, for those who know them, it's a pink, I think they call it a pink rose protea. No matter how beautiful they look, maybe a day down the line, they are dead inside. And actually, as I'm speaking, I'm realizing we've kept them after they've died too, because it makes a pretty nice brownish shade plant as well. But the reality is the moment they're removed, they don't mean anything anymore. And we need to be those that are attached to the plant, attached to the tree. So I think that how this looks for us is that I can speak as someone that has struggled with quiet time before. Someone who, or not so quiet time, I've heard it said. If your quiet times are loud, it's good. But I found it difficult to make that time in the day for several reasons, and all terrible excuses in retrospect. But I always had this mantra that I find the Lord throughout the day. Some people do it in the morning. Some people do it at night. I just pray as I go. I'm so holy, I just do it the whole day long. But we know that's a cop-out, right? Unless your life carries the same fruit as Jesus himself and King David and all those people who, and Daniel, who found the Lord several times a day for hours on end, unless your life carries the same fruit as them, sure, you find Jesus on the go because you have something special. But we can't afford to do that. We need to make time for Jesus. Even Jesus himself, being so connected to the Father in Mark 1:35, it's not going to go up, rising very early in the morning while it was still dark, he departed and went out to a desolate place where he prayed. And there's something incredible about, and this comes from a not morning person, there's something incredible about beating the busyness of the day. I almost get annoyed when I start hearing the first cars swishing past the house, and I'm like, I'm still busy with my quiet time. Can't you hold off? Because all of a sudden your mind goes into work mode again. And so one day I made a decision. I said, Lord, I had to be honest with myself. Where do I want to be and where I am now in terms of my relationship and my intimacy with you? And the reality is, as much as I've convinced myself that my devotions aren't necessary because I'm always talking to you, the fruit is simply not there. I'm not finding that I'm filled with you the whole time. I'm not finding fresh revelation of you the whole time. So I need to get back to the place, or not get back, at that point, I need to start getting to the place where you are my very first priority in the day. And I even believe this thing about each to their own. I am a night owl. In my perfect world where rules and jobs didn't exist, I would probably wake up at, well, nowadays 9 feels like a sin to wake up at 9 because children. But in my perfect world, I would wake up probably at 10 o'clock and go to bed at 12, 1. Because that's just how my body works. But I don't think God cares about how my body works. If we're offering ourselves as a living sacrifice, where's the sacrifice? If it's your natural flow, I don't know if you get that much rewards in heaven for it. And I can tell you this, the moment I started doing it, everything changed. Everything in my life changed. I fell in love with the person of Jesus again. And not the Jesus I've heard of. Not the Jesus I've even heard preached about. I fell in love with my Jesus. The one that's in my living room with me every morning. The one that when I worship, I'm not singing at a screen. I'm singing right into his face. That Jesus. That's the Jesus I met. And so it wasn't too bad in the beginning because it was like I did it at 7 o'clock in the morning. Because Alicia would take care of Amelia and I would just go and find a quiet place. But then Amelia started waking up early in the morning. We always bragged about her sleeping until 7, and then I think she heard me say that, and she decided 6:15 is now her new time. And then I'm like, oh, Lord, I was willing to sacrifice. Now I'm going to have to sacrifice a bit more. Again, I need to beat the busyness of the day. So now I had to wake up earlier. And then came little Laura, and where we are right now, again, not morning person, it's 5:15 every morning. It's me and Jesus, because if I don't, I can't do this. We need to be desperate for Jesus. Desperate. We need to be hungry for Jesus. I can't eat breakfast early in the morning. Some people wake up hungry already. We need to be hungry for him like that. And I will say what those quiet times started doing. My days became purposeful and meaningful. All of a sudden, I was never anymore in the place where I was saying, let's see what the day holds. I knew what the day was holding. The same reason we do prayer meetings before church. There's something of God's, God in his grace, he lets us in on what his plans are, which is a beautiful thing. You know, if you're listening to a preacher, I hope you guys aren't listening to YouTube preachers and stuff like that. Listen to people who you know, or you know someone that knows them, like within 4:12, because it's dodgy if you don't know someone's life. That's just a side note, it's for free. But if you're hearing people talk about the secrets of God, run for the hills. A secret is not made to be found. But you know what God does have? He has mysteries. And a mystery wants to be uncovered. And there's tons and tons of mysteries. It's like treasure, like treasure chests that you find as you meet with Jesus. And he, all of a sudden, it just pops. And you can't, it's so shiny, you can't even look at it. It's beautiful what the Lord does. The Lord wants us to find those things. He's mysterious in that way. And a mystery is something that's there for everyone to be found, but you have to go and look for it. And so I found these things, and my days became much more intentional and spirit-led. Often at times before doing this, I would wake up with anxiety because I knew of a difficult situation that's ahead of me. And instead of finding Jesus, I would fret about it and strategize and devise and play it over in my mind. And the joke's on me because most times it's not as bad as you think anyways. And when I started taking it to Jesus, it was literally a sense of saying, actually, Lord, this isn't my problem. This is actually your problem. If I caused the problem, I apologize, but I'm going to need your help to fix it. And he would do it. And I went into that thing so much more prepared. And even losing peace. Have you had nights where you struggle to sleep because you've had a situation playing out and you just can't sleep because it's mulling over and over and over in your mind? That's happened sometimes where you're just like, oh, I should have said that differently, or I don't know what they meant when they said that. It's like something happens in the morning where God just opens your ears and your eyes to see the reality of the matter and the truth. And he does that because he's faithful. So, as I'm closing, sorry, actually just one more thing I actually wanted to share. You know, Jesus spoke to the Pharisees, and I'm gonna make something awkward now, so I hope you guys are good with it. I'm going to make you self-conscious about the way you pray. If you already have a complex about that, close your ears now. Who are we praying to? When we're getting together in our prayer meetings before the meeting or any other prayer, who are we praying to? Are we saying something to the Lord so that other people might hear what I really am feeling? I've been challenged on this. If I'm feeling like there's a learning moment or a teaching moment, or I feel the Lord leading me somehow to share with the group, I stop my prayer. I open my eyes, I speak to the people. But when I'm praying to God. I'm not praying to be heard. I'm praying because I'm having a conversation with the Lord, with witnesses around me. And when I'm speaking to you, I'm speaking to you. But otherwise, I'm speaking to the Lord. Jesus said to the Pharisees that you love praying on the street corners, but your hearts are actually far from me. That's two verses that I've merged. But he says in Matthew 6:6, but when you pray, go into your room, shut the door, and pray to your Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees in secret, he will reward you. When we do these things well in public, we will get all the praise and the reward that our hearts desire. But when we do it the right way, we get to Jesus one day, and it's crowns upon crowns and jewels and rewards. The Word talks about rewards.
I want to land us there. Let's close your eyes. Just close our eyes.